This is Steve.
This is Justin.
From Sneakertopia, and thanks for listening to Rebel Radio. Fuck you, Josh.
I love you, Josh.
Damn it.
What's up? This is Rebel Radio.
What up? What up? This is DJ Newmark.
This is Peanut Butter Wolf.
It's your boy. It's okay.
Keep checking out Rebel Radio.
Rebel Radio.
This is Rebel Radio.
We're in the place right here. Rebel Radio is going down.
What did you say, Rebel Radio?
Oh, wait. Let's do it again.
Rebel Radio.
What's up, Rebels? Welcome back to Rebel Radio, the weekly show where I talk to the Rebels who are shaping our culture. We talk about how they do it, why they do it, and what you can do to get a little piece of the pie for yourself. We're also the only show to bring you new music every week from our friends at EDM.com. I'm Josh Levine, and with me in studio this week is the founders of Sneakertopia. If you're in LA next month, you got to come check this out. It is a new kind of museum style experience. It's shoppable, it's educational, it's entertaining. They're going to tell us all about it, but it's a new type of experience they're building around sneakers and sneaker culture, art, music, fashion, the combustion of all these things, and it sounds like it's going to be really fascinating. I love hearing their story about their journey to get to this place and how they brought their diverse backgrounds from street art, law, music videos, filmmaking, all of that stuff together into creating this experience for us. And we learned a little bit about teamwork, you know, how to make teams that are effective and get stuff done and also bring new ideas to the table. So good lessons for all of us coming up in this episode right after the EDM.com track of the week. GXX with Kill Me, the EDM.com track of the week. If you like that one, get over to EDM.com, check out more new music. And right now, let's get into the interview with Justin and Steve from Sneakertopia.
Doing this.
Yeah, first.
I'm excited to talk to you, learn about Sneakertopia, how it's all come together, and what it's going to be. Let's start by promoting what is Sneakertopia. Tell us about it.
Sneakertopia is an immersive pop art museum with sneaker themed installations.
Okay.
So it's like nothing you've ever seen, felt, or thought of before. It appeals to the hardcore sneakerhead. It appeals to people just like museums and like art and like to be able to get out and experience culture and experience culture that feels new and fresh in a way that's never been displayed before.
Wow.
And that sounds great. And the key thing is it's not just about the sneaker, it's about that cultural component, right?
Okay.
So we bring the guests along the journey of sneaker culture through all these different fields that it has influenced and been influenced by, from sports to music to film, fashion, art, and design.
Nice.
And so they get to experience all these other kind of ancillary cultures through the lens of the sneaker. I mean, it seems like such a functional product,
sure,
but it's such a powerful kind of form of self-expression that brings all these people together, which hopefully they'll all be, you know, experiencing in our space together.
When and where?
When? Open to the general public October 25th.
Okay.
At HHLA.
Nice.
Yeah, so it's a brand new development.
Yeah.
So that's kind of really cool. We're a brand new experience, and we linked up with this brand new property, perfect location, right between Culver. It's called the Playa District. It's right between Culver City and Playa Vista.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to be the first tenant there. We have the corner 15,000 square foot space
nice.
That we're completely customizing, building out into all these themed areas within the space. And it's right off the 405 freeway. Mm-hmm. So part of us being there entailed having three billboards that are going to be on the building that face the 405 that we've commissioned a really talented muralist to artwork on these billboards to promote the event. But it not only promotes the event, it almost like extends our exhibit onto the 405, which is like such like, you know, with car culture in LA, such a big thing to have.
Yeah, those billboards are big. I've seen the I think GoPro had them for a long time.
And they're illuminated at night, so they turn into these light boxes.
It's amazing. So you said it's something that you know, hasn't, no one's seen anything like this before. Where'd the idea come from?
The idea actually spawned, so I'm a content producer. Mm-hmm. I produce and develop TV show ideas, and the idea formulated from making a show about sneakers, and then how could we make an immersive exhibit to help support the TV show?
Yeah.
And that actually took a life on its own and evolved into what is now Sneakertopia.
So will there be a TV show too?
We will down the line, I mean, in the process of doing this, we are producing content, but it's kind of like what Justin was talking about. The audience, when you enter Sneakertopia, it is very much going through not only the evolution of sneakers and the history of sneakers, mm-hmm. but the emotions that you feel when watching a TV show, all the different spaces, every different room, it elicits emotion from the audience.
That's great. Well, let's talk more about that. I want to talk about you guys and your journey and how you got to this point. Tell us, there's a question I always like to start people off with. So one of you will have it easy because you'll have a second to think of your answer. But what's the first record you ever bought?
Sugar Hill Gang. No, and maybe Blowfly.
Uh-huh.
Do you ever hear Blowfly?
I used to love Blowfly.
And then there
Blowfly
were,
he's a forgotten icon.
This is Blowfly, the master of class, and I'm here to suck some soul to your ass. Guys and girls, bull daggers and fags.
And Richard Pryor albums.
Mm. Yeah.
It was like taboo listening to those albums back in the day.
Yeah, I had three or four. I still have three or four Richard Pryor albums. So funny, you know, the idea of listening to a comedy album now, right? That just doesn't, you know, we see specials everywhere and all that, but just the audio experience of comedy is so great. And Blowfly, it was a great one, you know, because I was definitely at an age where I shouldn't have been listening to that. And for anybody that doesn't know, look it up. He was the first dirty rapper. Very dirty, and very early on, probably late 70s, early 80s. And so I remember it was like some kid who was like a year or two older than me, and it was taboo for sure. What about you, Justin?
I don't know if it was the first one, but one of my earliest memories of buying an album was Boyz II Men.
Okay.
Yeah.
Motown Philly?
Yep.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Exactly.
That's cool. I started my...
Big Boyz II Men fan, yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So my first job in the music industry, I was an intern at Motown Records right after that album came out.
Nice.
So it was an interesting time.
Yeah,
I wish I used to see them walk in the halls. And, yeah, it was amazing.
I think aren't they like now back together in Vegas or something?
I think
Yeah, they have like a residency in Vegas.
I think so. That's like the journey, right?
Yeah,
that's amazing. Those are good places to start, for sure. And so your background is in TV. How'd you come to that?
In college, I started out making music videos while I was still in school.
Okay.
I went to school at Howard in D.C.
Nice. What's the first video you made?
It was a rap group called the Defiant Giants, and the song was called Rise, Black Man, Rise.
We got to start this one off. We got to start this one off, and I need a little bit of help. I hope you're taping this. It goes, it goes, it goes, it goes. Potential.
And then I did some work for this group called Shy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember Shy.
And then when I left Howard, my friend was in this group called Diggable Planets.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. And I shot their music video.
Oh, cool.
And It's kind of...
We love Digging for Plants.
Yeah, they're awesome.
Cool, which video?
Cool Like That.
Oh, is that right?
No, I shot this video called Straight for the Heart. So, okay. Doodoo Bug was my roommate.
Uh-huh.
And my other roommate, his name was Ugo, and they did a song together. Everybody was in this video. I think like Kobe Bryant, Bobby Brown. Wow. You can find it online.
Nice.
And then... the last two videos I did was Akineli, Love Me For Free. And Big Pun and Ashanti.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good. So was that the path you set out to be? Were you going to be a video director? I know some people would use that as kind of a stepping stone to other things.
Yeah, it was good. The plan was video director to commercials to feature films, and somewhere in between there, I just got from video director to documentarian to reality TV producer.
Okay, was that like was there a moment where you decided or realized that things were shifting, or is it just looking back in the rear view that it kind of happened?
The shift happened because I realized that I could be more active if I was open to doing more work than just what we viewed at the time as traditional filmmaking.
Yeah.
And unscripted TV was blossoming. This is like 2000, 2001. And my documentarian work, like I was directing episodes of Wife Swap.
Wow.
So like my documentarian work translated really nice into... Unscripted TV was a lot different back in 2000 than it was now.
Sure.
Back then, a director or a producer would be on a project and you have an episode and you'd see it completely through from meeting with the talent to actually editing the episode. Now it's kind of like a factory where it just keeps getting passed along down the assembly line. It doesn't really have that harder feel. But that was my transition.
Okay. This episode of Rebel Radio is brought to you by HoneyBook. Now, I love having HoneyBook as a sponsor of our show because, you know, I run a creative business. I know a lot of you do. And if you're like me, you didn't get into it because you wanted to do the administration stuff. You got into it because you wanted to be creative. And so HoneyBook is an online business management tool that lets you organize all your client communications, bookings, contracts, invoices, all in one place. You can consolidate the services you already use, like QuickBooks, MailChimp, Gmail, all that stuff. It's a great choice for client and business managers, for freelancers, business owners. It just lets you do everything that you need to do faster and better so that you can focus on what you really want to do. Save time, do more of what you love using HoneyBook. Right now, HoneyBook is offering listeners of Rebel Radio 50% off your first year with the promo code REBEL. Payment's flexible, and the promotion applies whether you pay monthly or annually. So go to honeybook.com and use the promo code REBEL for 50% off your first order. That's honeybook.com, promo code REBEL. And Justin, so you seem to have a really interesting business. In art and working with brands, and so explain a little bit of what that is and how you got into that.
Yeah, so I guess like I transitioned from, you know, education to career. It seems like there were major, I guess.
Did you say you went to law school?
Yeah, so it seems like there were major pivots, but now when I look back on it, there's like definitely like a common thread that goes through all of them. So for example, I was a sociology major undergrad, passionate. I consider sociology like creative nonfiction where you dive deep into societies. And
interesting.
Even my thesis that back then was about street performers and street artists, where I'd like be on the streets with them all the time. But yeah, I decided to go to law school and went to law school. And the most important lesson I learned in law school is that I did not want to be a lawyer.
Okay.
But I focused a lot on intellectual property. I was fascinated with creative industries and how to incentivize creatives to produce more work and how to protect creatives. And so after graduating, I really wanted to be in a cutting-edge industry and to be surrounded with a lot of creative people. And the reason why I didn't want to go the legal path, it's almost the antithesis of that, right? You know, creative entrepreneurs think outside the box, and lawyers are literally the ones drawing the box.
Right.
So, yeah, I jumped into the tech world right after graduating, starting off with a tech market research firm, in New York, and then moved to LA to continue the journey with them. And then went into early stage startups, and then started a couple companies in the tech industry, and then transitioned into the art world because I had a colleague in the tech industry, and we had kind of worked on, you know, partnerships and strategies together, and decided we wanted to start a company together. And I've always been passionate about the arts. I grew up in a family that no matter where we lived or traveled, going to museums and viewing public art was mm-hmm. a major theme of my childhood.
Yeah.
One of my mom's biggest passions is photographing street art around the world.
Oh, cool.
And she,
mine
she,
too, actually.
Really? Yeah. I mean, she volunteers at MoMA in New York now. So I grew up in that kind of a family, but nice. Without being a professional artist, I knew I wanted to be surrounded by artists and to do what I could to help artists. And so about, you know, 6 years ago, there was a mural ordinance passed in LA, which kind of sanctioned a lot of new public art and funded a lot of public art. And just kind of like scrappy startup guys, me and my co-founder Mikey went, we were Westsiders, so we'd bring our bicycles onto the Culver City train station, mm-hmm. bike all around downtown LA because we were following all these, like, to us at that time, larger than life street artists as they were putting up murals, meet with them on the spot, and like, from the tech world, it's like customer development for us. We're like finding out what opportunities they had, what obstacles they had, and really quickly learned, you know, a few major themes. One, that a lot of these artists were not being valued for the work that they were doing in the way that they should be, you know, producing massive murals that are basically billboards on the side of these businesses. And secondly, a lot of the artists did not want to handle the business side mm-hmm. of the game. They just wanted to focus on artwork. And we're like, well, we have biz dev backgrounds. Let's form partnerships with these artists.
Yeah.
And so so we started off by, since these artists were not making a lot of money on their mural commissions, what they were getting was huge marketing value with social media, because these massive murals would go up and they get tons of followers. So they had a global audience on social media, primarily right. Instagram. But they weren't monetizing that audience. So mm-hmm. we told them that we could help them build out merch programs. And we would do limited edition print and apparel production for them, build out their e-com website, do all the fulfillment, customer service, and started doing that for starting with LA, some of the prominent LA street artists.
Who was the first artist you worked with?
Wordsmith.
Okay.
So Wordsmith was the first one. And then the LA, you know, street art world is pretty tight-knit, so mm-hmm. that kind of led to a lot of other artists. And then to artists kind of around the world. And eventually we started layering other services like mural commissions and brand collaborations. But then Sneakertopia came along, and these guys came into actually one of our...
You had an exhibit going on when we first met.
Yeah, so one of our clients was this runway Playa Vista. So they're... Uh-huh. You know, smack in the middle of what's now everyone's calling Silicon Beach.
Yep.
And there are clients, we activate their vacant retail spaces and turn them into art spaces so that it brings culture to the community, but then also for them, it, you know, allows them to lease the space out at a faster rate.
Sure.
And so, yeah, we met the Steves, as I call the founders of Sneakertopia, at the space, and it was the most exciting opportunity I came across since joining the art world, because that, what we were talking about earlier, sneakers are a lens to so many other spaces and themes like sports, art, music, and all of our artists, because there's such an intersection between the sneaker world and the art world,
mm-hmm.
are passionate sneakerheads.
Mm-hmm.
And so we knew that there were going to be, like, we would be able to curate, like, the best of the best artists for this exhibit, because it would be so authentic to what they feel and what they want to kind of emote and produce through art. And so that led, you know, us to start having conversations, and then it led to something more deeper, which is now, like, I became the curator for Sneakertopia.
Cool.
So now, you know, we're all kind of on the same team, speaking one voice, and it's amazing. Yeah,
yeah, that's cool. You said something that I think is so smart, that they're giving you the space, or I don't know what your deal is, right? But in Playa Vista, right? That, you know, you always go, you hear about how malls are having all this trouble, or shopping centers or whatever, and there's like all these boarded up empty retail spaces. And I've always thought, like, why don't they just put stuff in there, even if they're not making money from it, to attract people and to have something cool to see? and like because that will attract other people to take leases.
That's so interesting. I like the first 4 months of working together was venue scouting.
Yeah.
And this conversation, this topic came up over and over again. You know, there's still, you know, some traditional mindsets out there, but now there are a lot of new mindsets, which is, yeah, experience is key to everything. Yeah. Even if you're, you know, retail, if you're going to have retail, it needs to be an experiencing the brand, feeling emotion with the brand. That's what this whole exhibit is about. So that, you know, I think afforded us to have a really great selection.
And HHLA has been really great as being a partner with us on this and in helping us to put this together.
And they realize that, that experience is huge. And, you know, we're not only going to be bringing what we expect to be a lot of people on a daily basis to the center.
Mm-hmm.
But we also like bring a cool factor of like we're bringing sneaker culture, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I've been doing events for 20 years, some great successes and some non-successes. And I think, you know, especially in LA, people underestimate the importance of the venue and the location. Mm-hmm. You know, you see people, especially that come from out of town and try to build events here or you know, businesses here, and they don't get how hard it is to get people to drive across town. And so, you know, being off 405 is really smart. Being visible to the street is really smart. How much, I mean, it sounds like that was something you guys put a lot of thought into kind of figuring out.
Figure out the location. It was a balance. I mean, ironically enough, we're right here on Fairfax, which is like the epitome of sneaker culture. And we looked around this area on this block down near the Grove, down by the beach in Santa Monica.
Arts District.
Yeah. And everywhere that we went and searched had an element of being able to bring a cool factor to elevating what that area had.
Right.
And where we are right now with so much going on and development in that space, in that Playa area, Playa location, this is like us bringing Fairfax to that Playa location.
Yeah,
like, so literally across the street from us is Sony Interactive Entertainment. Mm-hmm. Down the block from us is the biggest Nike camp in LA. Mm-hmm. Down the block from us is the LA Clippers practice facility. Mm-hmm. So, like, it's interesting, like, you know, what we've become surrounded by there, so it's, and the freeway access with, again, LA being car culture was really important, too.
How different is the event you guys are opening in a month, basically? Mm-hmm. How different is the event from the idea when you started?
Ooh, it definitely...
Well, you started with the idea, so you tell me.
It definitely has morphed and evolved. Difference from when we started space-wise, I mean, it's going to be kind of hard for...
Well, from the idea initially, when you and Steve Brown had started having your early talks.
From when we had our early talks... The idea started out as how do we create an exhibit that is going to not only entertain people, but inform at the same time?
Okay.
How are we going to create a space where this, utilizing sneakers as the conduit for actually bridging and expanding people's thoughts on what sneakers could and would be?
Mm-hmm.
Working with Justin and the artist, it's been a collaborative process the entire way. And literally every day, the artists, our builders, our build out. It's just from what we thought was going to be more visual with like movie wise and TV screens, we have translated that more into the actual art pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, there's been a real conscious effort to have this balance of being super authentic and respectful and appealing to the purest sneakerhead, but also appealing to the mass audience, right? And that's kind of a tight rope to walk along. And so, with that, all the immersive, larger than, like, we have a 70-foot mural in there, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have, like, I'm not going to tell you the subject matters, but, like, there are some massive installations in there. But none of them are cheesy. Like, all the sneakerheads, I'm sure, will love it. The general audience will love it. But then we also want to contextualize the exhibit within the history of where we are within sneaker culture. So we're going to have some of the biggest sneaker collections mm-hmm. on display in like the highest secured mm-hmm. clear shoe boxes you've ever seen, you know, that are going to be lining every single section. So there's that kind of mixture of experience and history and context that kind of goes throughout the exhibit that and those, I think, were layers that we added even, you know, mm-hmm. during the whole duration, like, the you know, of the building out the space, just to make sure that we're always, you know, finding that right balance.
It's like a recipe.
It is like a recipe. Yeah, we keep tasting it. It's like, okay, it's good, but we need to add a little bit more spice. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So where do you go for to check yourself on that, right? Because I think, you know, the authenticity piece, it's not an easy task to please both the purists and the masses. And I think, you know, I've had that experience when sometimes when you're in it, it's hard to see where the line is, right? So what do you guys do to make sure you're on the right side?
I think
side
one of
that?
The, I, and usually when I actually walk people through the exhibit, it starts with, you know, a lot of the times with the art and the artist. That's mm-hmm. why the selection and the curation of the artists, it wasn't just like who's the biggest artist out there that we can get, it's who's the most authentic artist to this culture,
right.
So like most of these artists have worked with the large sneaker companies for doing mural activations, brand collaborations, all mm-hmm. of that mm-hmm. they're all sneakerheads mm-hmm. So we knew that they weren't going to do anything that was kind of like that wouldn't appeal to themselves, right. So that it starts with that, and then you know, we do have this circle of kind of, I would call them unofficial advisors of this mm-hmm. point, who are not only like sneakerheads, but they're like pioneers in the
right.
industry.
Yeah.
And you know, they've been following the track and the about what we're doing and the path of what we're doing. And so, yeah, I mean, and we check each other also all the
daily.
Time. Daily. I mean, hourly. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, you come from TV. I think you said your partner, you know, comes from tech.
Mm-hmm. But he's Steve Brown, my co-founder, our co-founder. While he has a tech background, he's a filmmaker at heart too. He's been producing and directing docs for the last 10 years.
I watched some of
the
stuff online. It's pretty. It's pretty
Burning Man, the Spark documentary for Burning Man was his first doc. So yeah.
Oh, I didn't see that. I saw the. The bird, the
oh
bird
yes,
egg thing, which, I know. Is disturbing.
Which is crazy, right? Like, there's people out there that do that.
Yeah, everybody listening, you should check out that. Was it called Obsession? No, it's called something.
Obsessed.
Well, there's a documentary you should find about
that people that collect these bird eggs. That's highly illegal because they're rare eggs. And
it's just fucked up. Leave the birds alone. But my point was, it would be tempting, you know, to say, well, we're not event guys. Like, that's not what we do. And to feel like that's a, you know.
You know, and so over the last couple of weeks, removing that word event and expanding it to experience.
Mm-hmm.
Because an event in many ways is something that passes quickly.
Okay.
And we're a marathon.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be set up for 4 months. We launch in October, and we're here till like the end of February, middle of March. So,
right.
It's longer than being an event. It's more than just an overnight thing. It's when you think about what Sneakertopia is, there's going to be programming that's going on the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be panels and workshops.
Mm-hmm.
We're embedded into not only the sneaker culture, sneaker community, but to the audience of exposing them to everything that's in the space.
And beyond that, it's like, you know, LA is the first city. So,
right.
You know, it'll open up in major cities around the world. And to that point, like, you know, when we're talking about, okay, the messaging to the consumers, you know, there are events out there, right? There are where it's like, you know, you buy a ticket to go to, you know, the chili cook-off or the circus, and it's a transaction. But our relationship with the audience, with the consumer, it's a relationship with a brand, that it's not just going to be a one-time thing. It's going to be hopefully a lifetime interaction with us, because there's some much larger plans in play for Sneakertopia, that exists well beyond even that person's individual experience that day at the exhibit.
So are there models that helped kind of shape what you guys are doing?
Models being like the other pop-ups or the other events experiences?
I guess it could be anything, right? So it could be MoMA, it could be Complex Con, it could be, you know, Beyond the Streets,
I think we're all exposed to many different elements, and we take those times of exposure, and we look at the good and what we may not want to have,
right?
And we try to take all little pieces of it. From when you do an event, like if you're launching a TV show, you do have to plan and produce an event that's going to launch that show.
Sure.
If you're doing a long-term exhibit, if you're doing anything, there's the planning that goes to putting it together, and then you look at other pop-ups that are out there, or what has most recently been out there, and you take what are those great experiences that people have from that, and then how do we put our spin on it? How do we put our special sauce on it? How do we work with our team to make sure that not only does it stay authentic to the culture, but to what the artists want to do when they are developing this?
Yeah, and it is about and I don't know if this was necessarily the inspiration, but when we look back on it, there are different components of, and not necessarily the strengths for us. Mm-hmm. You know, it might not be the strength for someone else, but the strength for us is combining these different components. So, for example, the museum world, right? So definitely the similarity with the museum world is we're not just dealing with, you know, a product or theme that we're showcasing that's, you know, an Instagrammable moment. We're dealing with a culture. Right. So dealing with a culture, we draw from that kind of museum world, I guess that museum world experience where it has kind of that level of seriousness, but then we also will do kind of workshops and panels like Steve mentioned. Then from the other side with the pop-up museums, you know, like, for example, our ticket format is very similar, right? We have pre-sale tickets. People need to buy in advance a ticket to come to the exhibit for a specific time and day. And, you know, we'll be letting about 150 people in every single hour. And then we have these larger-than-life, immersive installations that becomes an enjoyable experience. So we're kind of combining this really playful aspect of pop-ups with the kind of seriousness that's needed when you're representing a culture. Mm-hmm. And I don't know of a comparison out there, and I'm not trying to say, oh, this is a, you know, like no one else has done, and I don't think anyone else has done stuff like this, but where there wasn't like an exact replica of something. Sure. Where like, oh, let's follow that blueprint. We had to kind of pull inspiration from different areas.
Yeah, we really worked hard to create something that's special and unique.
And one thing that I did want to mention, because I know we kind of generally described what this exhibit's about, but I think it would be good, you know, we're being very conscious about not revealing the exhibit before people get there, but giving like a little visual reference, because we did touch on the fact that there will be special events, and we've curated this space so that it's such a great core exhibit that if you just get a ticket and go during the open hours, you know, you'll have an hour and a half of like a really enjoyable experience no matter when you go. Right. But we've also curated so that there are certain sections that can be carved out to have private events, you know, VIP events, special workshops and panels. Mm-hmm. And one of those key areas is in the area that we're dedicating to music industry's influence on sneaker culture. We're having a massive music stage that's certified and permitted for music performances, concerts, DJ sets, and then also panels and workshops. And these music stages are built as if they're massive shoeboxes. So the performance stage is a 20-foot wide by 16-foot deep by 4-foot tall Adidas shoebox. During the core of the exhibit, we had the entire back wall is projected with this motion mural. Mm-hmm. It's basically this really interactive mural with short throw projectors, so people can actually go up and stand and become part of that motion mural without casting shadows. Mm-hmm. That kind of tells the history of all the important music collaborations with Adidas, starting, you know, with Run DMC passing the baton to Pharrell and Beyonce and so forth. Mm-hmm. So during the core of the exhibit, that's people will be able to jump on the stage and interact with that. Nice. But then for any special event, that whole area can be a concert, and we can actually even project specific content that's focused on that concert or that event.
Have you announced who's performing yet?
Not yet.
Okay.
Yeah. We have not announced our special events yet. Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, that sounds amazing. I mean, I think, you know, a lot of what I've seen out there is where those elements are very separate, they're kind of, you know, a bit disconnected.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and even, I guess, you know, even ComplexCon, which I'm a huge fan of, and I'm, you know, both the people who do it are friends, and mm-hmm. some of them have been on this show, and I think it's a great experience, but I do think, like, you've got your shopping and your shoes, and then there's music, and it's not really a cohesive experience in the same way. That's one of the things I thought that, you know, they could be improved on. Mm-hmm. So that's cool. It's cool to hear. What's the biggest thing you guys have learned so far in going through this journey?
Yesterday? Like, every day we learned something.
Is that right?
I think for me, the biggest thing learning so far was how to develop and create something from scratch that is... The closest thing to this is like building a house from scratch.
Yeah.
Every single step of the way, putting together an amazing team, helping that team not only work hard and work strong every single day, but at the same time to feel open and honest to share their thoughts and share their input so that we're able to grow together.
That's great.
That's been the biggest and the hardest thing.
That's cool. And I'm glad you say use the house analogy. So I have an agency that we do a lot of things that we've never done before. And that's, I would like to say that's kind of a strength of ours, mm-hmm. right? But I often tell people that, you know, making a brand video or producing an event or building a house are basically all the same thing. So is that true? I mean, you've done now at least a couple of those.
you learn that. So that's along the way, every single day, the learning of going, oh, I know why I'm doing this. There was this experience I've done before.
Right.
Or there's this person I've talked to in the past that I'm totally cool with, and now I know how to utilize that asset. Yeah. Like, you didn't realize at the time why you were experiencing something or why you did something or who's a person that you met, that everything is, like, totally coming together. And the space was so raw that when we moved into it, it has been like building a house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, sure.
Wiring electric, putting walls up, like it's literally has been like building a house, and then finding every person in that team and working with them to help build that house.
So with something like this that has so many moving parts, there's, you know, just certain things you can't control.
Mm-hmm.
What are you guys worried about? What's going to go wrong if you look back on this and it didn't go the way you wanted it to?
I think we've, that would have been, I mean, it's a great question. It would have even been like the best question probably a few weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
because there are certain things in our control and there's certain things that aren't. And because we're going into a new development, and that's probably one of, unlike just like a logistics operational front, like, it ties into one of the biggest things I've learned is I've learned a lot about this construction process because we're going into a new development, right? And so we have to work side by side with a construction crew that's getting the first permit for the space from the city and dealing with city permitting and buildouts and fire and safety and all of that. And that was not in our control at all, right? Because we're not even allowed to kind of mm-hmm. touch that. We come in and get our special event inspected and everything after the fact. We build in the interior of the vanilla shell. And that was our biggest concern over the past 3 months because we couldn't control it.
Mm-hmm.
But really finding a way where we, as, you know, producers and curators, and could work side by side with a construction crew, we were just had, you know, they now became part of almost the team, right? And like we said, okay, we need lighting here, we need lighting there, and they needed to put that on their electrical plans, and I, you know, I was reviewing these technical plans, which is like new language for me. But we've overcome that hurdle, and so that, I think, if we can get by that, we can pretty much get by anything, I think. But that was a week ago, that would have been like, I'm really concerned about that. Now I'm not.
Sure. That's great.
Got the permit.
That's a great feeling.
Capacity 754 official. Nice. So
that's really cool.
Yeah. So the city signed off on that. So yeah.
I mean, a year ago when this idea like first started gestating, my partner Steve Brown, his house had just burned down in Malibu.
Oh shit.
Like literally I saw him a week before he was going away and it was like Noah's Ark. He went out of town, he went to San Francisco for a meeting. He had his rolling bag, his laptop. And that weekend, the house burned down. So he came back to literally nothing and had just moved here from San Francisco. We sat down at the restaurant on Sunset. And we're having breakfast. He's like, so what is it you want to do? If you had to do all your projects, we were developing stuff together. We had like 16, 17 projects. So any one project that you would want to do, what would that be? I was like, you know, it's not a TV show. It's not developing or creating a TV show from all the stuff that we're doing together. But I want to do this venture, the Sneakertopia venture. It's like, okay, let's do it. And it was literally that faith of jump and the net will appear.
Why was it that?
We utilized all of our skills that we had built up to that moment and went into a space that we had never completely done.
Mm-hmm.
Not knowing a team, like jumped in the net will follow. We didn't know Justin November last year.
Right.
85% of these people that we're working with now, we did not know last year.
Yeah.
And everything has fallen into place from raising our money to finding our location to hitting all of our dates. It's just been a true blessing.
You know, thinking about it, it's almost like what we talk, it's like a microcosm of really about sneaker culture in general. Like the venture is like bringing you together with all these people that you never met before, and like that's what we're trying to do with the exhibit. We're bringing all these people together because sneaker culture touches so many communities. So you've already like achieved it personally for yourself. Now we just have to achieve it professionally. So
when you start that out, as you said, now you've built this team, how do you think about who belongs on the team, or who are the right people for you to work with and who's not?
The Jack Welch bus analogy.
Yeah. Put the right people on the bus, right?
I think for right now, it's been, and no judgment. It's just we know the vision that we have to achieve. We know the work ethic that's required to push that vision forward.
Yeah.
And anybody that can't keep up with that vision, it's okay, we understand, and you know, we just have to keep it moving and find somebody else who's going to and can do it. I mean, and we all push hard. Justin pushes. We literally, it's, I, both I and my partner, Steve Brown, we work by example and not by, like, demanding. So we just continue to show that example, and people that can keep up and maintain with that example are the ones that continue this journey.
I mean, it's interesting that, you know, you come from entertainment where, you know, the difference between a great movie and a bad movie or TV show is often, you know, it's the people, it's the cast, it's the crew, right? And that's I think what it means to be a great producer is to get the right people more than anything else. And you know, the rest of the business world kind of forgets that, right? That everyone's living on Monster and Indeed and just taking, you know it's a mess out there in corporate America. And I think that's the, you know, maybe the biggest lesson that the rest of the world could learn from Hollywood is that, you know, it only works if you have the right people. That's cool. I have a lightning round. I'm gonna run you guys through.
These are the scary rounds.
Jed didn't tell us about the lightning round.
Jed, oh yeah,
our publicist, you didn't tell us about the lightning round.
Lightning round.
Oh, but so we were talking about your partner and his movie. So between the weirdo egg collectors and sneakerheads, like, what have you guys learned about obsession?
What I've learned about obsession is not to judge anybody from their obsession, but to use that as an opportunity to take a deep dive and crash course into being able to learn something. Like, that person who's obsessed is going to give you...
it's going to
download you so quickly on not only what that subject matter is, but their passion is going to come across in it, and that's what's going to help you to understand it even more. It's more about not only understanding what that subject matter is, but why do people get so passionate about it.
And for me, I think which is, I think, a really great component of obsession, especially with sneaker culture, is the cross-generational power of it. Because, you know, the audience, I knew the audience for, you know, sneaker culture was huge. But the great thing that we're realizing is that, you know, the back then younger sneakerheads now have kids who are, like, you know, in their 20s. And, you know, they can pass down that obsession, and it's this bond that they can share with their kids around that same culture. And, you know, whether it's the same shoe or, you know, different athlete, they actually kind of have that bond together because of this uniting obsession. You know, one of the things that I talk about sneaker culture when we're in the space is that, and partly of how we've curated it, is that it's timeless, right?
Yeah.
Like, the Chuck Taylors came out in the 20s, Adidas Superstars and the Jordans in the 80s, and, you know, all of those sneakers are some of the most popular of today. So because it's timeless, it allows, like, cross-generational bonds to occur.
I mean, that's so interesting you say that. Like, 15 years ago, one of my best friends said to me that the difference, the changes happening in the world, is that we are the first generation where, you know, we and our kids are both wearing Jordans. And, you know, and that is such a huge shift. And it's, you know, it's subtle, right? But there is this, I mean, we see it happening in every area of life now that, you know, I think parents and their children are becoming closer. And, you know, I think, you know, if you're as old as me, you grew up in an era where there was that rebellion, and that, you know, youth culture was about creating distance from the generations before you. And I think a lot of that is eroding. And I actually think sneakers have a lot to do with that. Because when you literally walk in the same shoes, right, you can, you know, and I remember those times. I have a weird relationship to sneaker culture.
I want to hear that.
Yeah.
Well, because, I mean, I've always been into sneakers, you know, from day one, it was Chucks. And every, you know, if you didn't have Chucks on, you were Herb. Like, that's all it was. And then, yeah, Superstars and Air Force Ones and all that. And but there used to be a time when you walk in a room and you would know who you want to talk to. And you walk in a room full of strangers, and immediately by the shoes, right, you could pick out your people. And you kind of can't do that anymore. Definitely not in the era of Yeezys and Boosts and all that, right? Because all of this stuff is readily available to the masses, and it didn't used to be. You know, you used to have to go to a dangerous neighborhood, or at least a neighborhood that you were unfamiliar with, to find the stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And so all that's changed, and so personally, I don't love that. I get it. It's not, I miss a little bit of the exclusivity, not in the like Travis Scott's that no one can afford, or that are, you know, everyone's sold out to sell on eBay, but just that, like, it's exclusive because people don't know about it, mm-hmm. kind of thing. Yeah. That's just me. Yeah. I'm resigned to the fact that, like, the world has moved on from that, and mostly I think it's a good thing. But there's a little bit that's, you know, we lose some things along the way too.
Yeah.
But you guys both have cool shoes on today.
I didn't wear my coolest shoes because our location is it's very dusty.
Oh, yeah.
Every day we walk through, the shoes are film. Literally on my bench in my house, I have the Clorox wipes.
Oh, yeah.
Every day I come back and wipe down the shoes. Yeah.
Yeah. Clorox wipes, that's a good one. So a lot of times people ask me how I keep my sneakers clean.
Yeah.
And the wipes,
they're good.
They're the best.
Yeah.
They're simple and easy. And, you know, I sent one friend down to Jason Marks to drop his shoes off and have all that done. But I think just the wipes, that gets it done. So were you guys always interested in sneakers?
My son is what, it didn't spark my interest, but it was like what had exposed me to the culture. When he was in high school, and this is before StockX or any of that stuff, he was making trades on eBay.
Yeah.
You know, I'd buy him a pair of sneakers for Christmas, and 2 months later, he's got four pairs. And I'm like, where'd those come from? It's like, oh, I trade up. And then, but then before I know it, the four pairs are gone. He's got one pair that's like $1,500. I'm like, dude, you got more expensive shoes than I do. You're still in high school. Now his collection is probably, it's modest. It's probably like the $25,000,
$30,000
range.
Crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it was my son. But that, like, back to like what you were saying, it's like when we're in a generation now where you're able to speak that same universal language of kicks with your kids.
Yeah. I'm nervous because my son is almost my same size. And like he's 10, so he's brutal on his shoes. But so I'm gonna have to like lock my shoes.
I've always been into sneakers. I was in elementary and middle school when, you know, the early Jordans came out. And I've also always been really into technology. So one of my favorite sneakers as a kid were the Reebok pumps, to the point where I was so obsessed with them that after they were completely worn down, I cut out the tongue and the pump and tried to use them in my other shoes. Oh, so I put like the pumps in all my next shoes. It didn't work
at
all.
That doesn't
work. not at all.
It turns out.
But I really tried to kind of preserve that technology.
That's hilarious.
Into other shoes. That was like one of my early memories with sneakers.
That's hilarious. I worked on the 20th anniversary of the pump.
Really? Nice.
Yeah.
They were revolutionary when they came out. The idea of being able to just like push that little ball.
It's amazing too because, you know, like, within, how can I say it? Like, Reebok was not really a cool brand, right?
Yeah.
And yet, they made that one shoe
that
just killed it. I like the classics, too, but with that pump, like, you know, the whole community embraced that. And I think you see that a lot where it's really dominated by Nike, Adidas. But, you know, there's those shoes here and there that break through, you know, Suede Pumas, like, that you know, there's a weird sort of openness and closeness at the same time, which is cool. Okay, lightning round. I promised that a long time ago. What's your favorite city to travel to?
I'm from New York. I mean, I just love always going back there. The energy.
Yeah.
It's just, there's no place like it in the world.
Are there spots that you always have to hit when you go?
I love hitting Meatpacking District in New York.
Yeah.
Soho's cool, but if I had to say that the place that I would spend my most time, and I live there too, is going back to Brooklyn. It's amazing. Just right over the bridge there, you still have much of a city feel, but it feels organic and fresh.
Nice. Justin, where do you like?
New York as well, because of family.
Yeah.
Because of family. But this summer I experienced Detroit, and I love Detroit.
Cool.
I plan on going back there a lot.
Nice.
Great art things happening in Detroit.
Absolutely. Who's your favorite DJ?
Favorite DJ?
I love Stretch Armstrong.
Yeah, me too.
It's so funny you say that.
Stretch has been on the show. We love Stretch.
I love Stretch.
He's an old friend. Yeah.
I love Stretch.
It's incredible.
Favorite DJ? He's not really a DJ, but he's kind of in that realm. I still have Timbaland. I think he's like, you know, one
Timbaland's
of my favorites.
Amazing.
Yeah. And I like I like old DJ sets. Like, I liked Paul Oakenfold, like that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah. Nice.
Now they're kind of probably still in that. I guess I like all the people that are doing Vegas residencies now.
Sure.
Ages me a little bit, but yeah.
That's all right.
You're not going to say Paulie D?
What's the last great book you read?
Last great book? The Tipping Point.
Yeah.
Great book.
It's good.
Malcolm Gladwell. Yeah.
It's a book I read multiple times. Einstein's Dreams.
Oh, I don't know it.
Yeah, it's a great book. It's fiction.
Uh-huh.
And it's actually really small book. You could, if you get into it, finish it in a night. Every chapter describes a fictional dream that Einstein had about a rule of time and describes a society that operates by that rule of time. So a short example is, you know, when society operates by a rule of time where the more elevated you live, the slower time goes. Mm. And then how does that affect the way that people live in that world?
Oh, wow.
So yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah,
I'm going to check that out. What movie have you seen the most in your life?
It's tough. Because my friend and business partner, Marlon Wayans, mm-hmm. I've watched a lot of his movies multiple times.
What's your favorite Marlon Wayans movie?
I'm seeing all his films. Sextuplets right now.
Okay.
Having been friends for 30 years and seeing the evolution, like being there for Don't Be a Menace.
Yeah.
Being on the set of Little Man and White Chicks. You know, so maybe White Chicks. I mean, I was in Vancouver with them when they were filming it. That movie is, anytime you put it on, it just.
That's funny. Yeah, it's funny. I mean, to me, Don't Be a Menace is it's undeniable. Uh-huh. And I think I'm glad to see that they are coming out with something new, because like that type of satire I think is missing. You know, I grew up with, you know, Airplane and Hot Shots and all that, and we need more of that. Yeah. What movie have you seen?
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Oh wow. Mm. That's like a heavy watch.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. That's great. Tell me one decision that changed your life forever.
Going to Howard University. We're going to that school.
Yeah.
It set in motion every cause and effect in my life. I could translate back to there.
That's great.
The roots, the Mecca.
Nice. That's cool.
Moving to LA.
Yeah. Nice. So if I worked at Sneakertopia, what's something that I would hear you guys saying over and over?
Wow, good question.
That is a great question. What do I hear from you every day? I have mine whenever you're ready. You want to go first?
I don't want to say I'm speechless, because something that you would hear me say over and over every day.
Mm. Or what do you hear over and over?
What do I hear over and over? Yeah. You know, and we talk about this internally, is that when we send out the deck, when we talk to people over the phone about it, when they get in there, they go, I had no idea. Yeah. This was, like, I had an idea, but this is bigger than anything my imagination could ever have wrapped its head around.
For sure.
That is, if there had to be one consistent response or statement that we hear on a daily basis when they walk into there, is, wow, I had no idea it was this amazing.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool, and it's sort of not surprising. Like, I, you know, as I mentioned, you know, Jen and I were at the early Coachellas together, and you know, it's the same thing. Like, we would talk to people about it, but until they were there and saw it, and I had the same experience at Hot Import Nights, at Major League Gaming, these sort of things that are new and that you've never seen before, and it's like, yeah, the deck doesn't really tell the story.
What we hear a lot, or what we focus on a lot, is staying focused on communicating the importance of what we're doing.
Yeah,
we really need to communicate that importance, which is related to like all the messaging that we're sending out, whether it's through decks or discussions, but that we are doing something important that is giving a nod to this really important culture. Mm-hmm. And to convey that both to people who are familiar with it and those who are unfamiliar with it.
Yeah. That's cool. Well, I'm excited to see it. Yeah. Congratulations on getting this far, and you know, I'm sure the last sprint to the finish is going to be.
It's a marathon. Yeah, no sprinting here.
We sprint our marathons.
That's right. So, how does everybody learn more, get tickets? Tell us where to find it.
Online, www.sneakertopia.com. Okay. And all the information from getting tickets, getting memberships, booking events, looking at our calendar of panels and events that are going on, everything. That's the one-stop location online to find out daily what's happening at Sneakertopia.
And our social handles are Go Sneakertopia.
So okay, cool.
Go Sneakertopia.
Oh. Thanks for doing this. It was great
thank
talking
you.
To
you. Thanks for having
it was fun.
Us.
Yeah. Come back after and tell us how you made it such
and
a
you'll
success.
Come on, you'll yeah, come you on definitely got to come down.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Private tour, everything, yeah.
Love to.
All right.
Cool. Dope.
Yo, that was Rebel Radio with Steve and Justin from Sneakertopia. I hope you enjoyed it. I know I did. Make sure you check out Sneakertopia if you're here in LA when it's playing. Or sounds like they might be bringing into a city near you, so make sure you stay tuned with them. Of course, leave us a comment on Twitter, on Facebook, at Rebel Radio Net. You can always drop us a review if you're in the mood. And most importantly, come back next week for more Rebel Radio. Peace.